So welcome, everyone. I'm Yolande Tomlinson, the National Education Coordinator at the U.S. Human Rights Network. And thank you for joining today's webinar, To Geneva and Back, How to Advocate, How to Present Your Human Rights Issues on a Global Stage. We have a fairly large call today with over 120 participants. The call is currently in lectern mode. And when we begin the Q&A process, you will have the opportunity to participate in the conversation by pressing star one. I will remind you of this as we move forward. If you're joining us by phone, we also have a web component to today's call. So be sure that you've logged in also online to view the PowerPoint presentation. And if you're not able to join us online, you know, listening by phone is also adequate. The PowerPoint will also be available after the call for you to be able to go through. So if you're not able to view online, that should suffice. This call is being hosted by the ICCPR Task Force, which is a member structure of the U.S. Human Rights Network. And for those of you who are not familiar with the network is a national network of organizations and individuals who are working to build and strengthen a people-centered human rights movement in the U.S. We pride ourselves on leadership being centered on those who are most directly impacted, and where the full range of diversity within communities is fully embraced and respected. So, as I mentioned, currently we're in lecture mode, and as we begin the Q&A process, we're asking you to participate by using star one. We have a series of presenters lined up for this call. But before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about our ICCPR task force, who I mentioned is hosting the call. Here you'll see a list of our task force members. Our task force is an all-volunteer group of folks who dedicate their time to ensuring that we have effective coordination and participation in the process. We're currently accepting applications for the task force for the Convention Against Torture. That application is due February 14th, which is Friday. So if you're interested in becoming a part of that task force, please visit our website at www.ushrnetwork.org to fill out the application and turn that in. So our agenda for the call is as follows. It will be an update on the ICCPR coordination process and plans for moving forward. And that portion will be led by Nazrina Bargzi. Followed by Nazrina is a session on our plans and strategy for advocating in Geneva and before the Human Rights Committee. And that session will be led by Katrina Anderson. After Katrina, we will have advocating in the U.S. during the review process. That will be led by Ifia Nwangaza. And after Afia, we'll have our last portion, which is the post-review plans, taking the results home. And we have two case studies, one presented by Cindy Suhu and Jateka Edy, and followed by our plans for consultation as well as connecting the ICCPR to the other review processes, which will be led by Agent DK. And then we will open up the lines for Q&A. As you may have realized from the flyer, this is a two-hour call, but in the interest of time, we've narrowed it to an hour and a half. So the main portion of the call will be and should be completed within 50 minutes or so. So if you're only able to spend an hour with us, I'm going to encourage you to use the raise hand feature, star one, to be at the top of the queue because that's how you'll be recognized for your question, so you can get your questions in first. And if you plan to do this for the hour and a half of the call, then I would encourage you to wait a little bit longer to get your questions in. So the first portion, update on the ICCPR coordination process and plans for moving forward. Nazrina Bargzi is the National Security and Civil Rights Attorney at the Asian Americans Advancing Justice, formerly known as Asian Law Caucus. Nazrina is also co-chair of our ICCPR task force. Nazrina, please.
Thank you so much, Yolande, and hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today to have this call. I wanted to start just by going over you know, how we got here and where we are right now. So as you guys know, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights is a key international human rights law treaty that provides a range of protections for civil and political rights. It was ratified by the United States in 1992, and the first report was submitted by the Clinton administration in 1994. The second and third reports were actually submitted at the same time in 2005 by the Bush administration. And the current report that's under review, the fourth report, that was submitted in 2011, and it's the first report that's been submitted by the Obama administration. So the upcoming 2014 review will be the first review of the Obama administration's compliance with the ICCPR, which presents a very exciting opportunity to engage with his administration and see sort of what they can come up with in working with civil society and in trying to ensure compliance with the ICCPR in the United States. I wanted to talk a little bit about the work that the task force has been doing to organize people for the upcoming review, which will be in March. What we were hearing from the folks who are organizing the actual review is that it would be very helpful if we were organized around themes, and it would be very helpful if we would leave time for questioning and other things of that nature. So what we did is we looked at the list of issues, but we also looked at issues that hadn't actually been in the list of issues but were important to our community members and which we thought we could still continue to advocate for, and we came up with 9 different working groups. We've been organizing people who are planning to attend in Geneva around these 9 working groups, which I'm just going to go through quickly so everyone knows what the groups are. And if you're not yet joined into one of these groups, I would highly suggest that you email our ICCPR coordinator, Kira, whose information we can provide later to join one of the working groups. So the first working group is Rights of Indigenous People. The second group is Non-Discrimination. The third group is Counterterrorism. The fourth group is Criminal Justice and Border Access to Justice. The next is Immigrant and Migrant Rights. The next is police brutality, gun violence, and gender-based violence. Then we've got voting rights and minority rights. Then we have children's rights. And the fourth group is workers' rights, freedom of assembly, and free speech. So what we hope to do is when we're in Geneva that we can all be working in these different teams to try to optimize time at the formal and informal briefings and other opportunities that come up. There will likely be other organizations who are there who we've not yet had a chance to speak with, and so there might be some last-minute, you know, changes and things that come up. The best way to make sure this goes as smoothly as possible is if folks really could try to make an effort to join one of these groups if you do plan to be in Geneva. And even if you don't plan to be in Geneva and, you know, want to make sure something is conveyed, it would be, you know, worth your while to connect up with us and see how it might fit into what the different groups are planning on presenting. That's for the upcoming review. One thing that has also been happening this year is that there are actually going to be a number of different reviews that will be happening this year. And initially, you know, that might be a little bit confusing having 3-4 reviews of international human rights treaties in the same year, but when we thought about it, we actually realized it was a really wonderful opportunity to start connecting up these different treaty obligations together and really trying to make this about a year about human rights. And so the different task forces that work on treaty implementations have agreed to join together and do a year-long human rights campaign to connect up all the treaty mechanisms. And so you guys know that the ICCPR review will be in March 2014. But the additional reviews that are coming up is that the International Covenant on Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, CERD, their review is going to be in August 2014. And then the Universal Periodic Review process will be starting up in September 2014. And the Convention Against Torture review will be right behind it in November 2014. So what we're hoping to do is to connect up all those pieces. And the U.S. Human Rights Network is working with the task forces of each of these mechanisms to do this campaign. The campaign was announced in January 2014 on Martin Luther King's birthday, and it calls for a bold human rights movement in the United States. The campaign seeks to use social media to connect grassroots organizing and educating to help build the movement for human dignity. You can find a ton of information about this campaign if you go to the U.S. Human Rights Network website, and you'll be hearing from us periodically about different things that we're doing to get that going. Because it is a social media campaign, one thing that we have decided to do is to do a webinar on social media training. The webinar is not only to assist in that mechanism's year-long human rights strategy I was telling you about, but more broadly, we found that amplifying through Twitter, through Facebook, through Instagram, and through other social media has permitted folks to have conversations that they might not otherwise have. It's also permitted us to, you know, tag the State Department, tag other people in, you know, what we're tweeting, what we're Instagramming, and has resulted in having conversations that might not otherwise occur. So there will be a webinar on how to use social media tools in order to hold U.S. accountable for the ICCPR requirements, and also to educate and inform broader community of the human rights in the United States. It will be the basics of social media, so including, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and the specifics on how to use those in human rights advocacy. I believe that the network circulated details about this call yesterday, but they will be circulating that information again. You can also find it on the U.S. Human Rights Network webpage. It will be on at 2 p.m. Eastern on February 20th. The other thing that we have coming up in advance of the review is we are planning a day of action on February 26, 2014. The training will also assist in helping people do some actions around this. What the day of action is something that we did back in September as well in advance of other advocacy that we were doing. And what it is the goal is to create a space and an opportunity to have public conversations about the importance of human rights protections domestically and to connect our advocacy to human rights campaigns in the United States. We picked a theme this year for the February 26th Day of Action is going to be the National Day of Action for Human Rights in commemoration of Trayvon Martin. Our goal was to connect these broader human rights that we have with real-life incidences that have happened in this country, including the tragic death of Trayvon Martin. The planned actions that include having a Twitter rally where you would use a tag of, you know, U.S. Human Rights Network or at State Department, and there are a number of hashtags that we're suggesting as well. We're also suggesting that people change their Facebook banner and post pictures on the network's Facebook or Instagram or wear orange in order to commemorate the Day of Action. At our last Day of Action, we had a number of local actions, including people hosted events around human rights issues that they were working on, and then they would post those pictures of the events onto our various social media platforms. People also sent letters to local representatives, and we're suggesting that they do the same about the Day of Action and the upcoming ICCPR review. With that, I am going to hand it back to you, Yolan.
Thank you, Nazrina. And we'll have an opportunity, as I mentioned, at the end of the call for you to ask questions about all that Nazrina has gone over, as well as all of this information is available on the U.S. Human Rights Network's page. The next portion of the call, we'll hear from Katrina Anderson on our plan for advocating in Geneva before the Human Rights Committee. Katrina is the Human Rights Counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights, where she leads the center's work to integrate international human rights strategies into domestic legal practices. Using human rights documentation and advocacy with international and regional human rights bodies, she works to hold the U.S. accountable to its human rights obligations in the areas of sexual and reproductive rights. Katrina?
Thanks, Yolande. So I'm going to go over a little bit about where we are in the process right now and how people can expect to plug into that, both for folks who are attending the review in Geneva and for people who are staying home and wanting to engage here and participate and get the word out to their networks about what's happening in this review. So we also want to make sure in this webinar and in this training session in general that we make sure everybody has the tools and information they need to prepare for what comes next. So just to give a quick overall review of our strategy for engaging at this stage, we, as the task force, are trying to provide as many opportunities as possible for those who are in Geneva or not in Geneva to participate, and especially prioritizing those who are directly affected by human rights violations. We are hoping to foster collaboration in U.S. civil society, and we think that by collaborating, our message is stronger and more effective because we can say that it's coming from a collective voice. And so we're also looking to engage with a committee on formulating recommendations that truly reflect the situation of human rights in the U.S. and also can help us in our advocacy when we bring those recommendations home. And finally, we are hoping to create opportunities to engage with the U.S. delegation in Geneva and holding them to the ICCPR provisions and thinking through strategies about how to implement those recommendations as well. I know Naz gave an overview of the treaty. I just wanted to remind people about the makeup of the committee. The committee is composed of 18 individual experts on human rights, and these are experts who are appointed to serve in their individual capacities. So they're not representing their country. Having said that, there is one U.S. member on the committee who will abstain from the periodic review process to ensure neutrality. So we should expect to engage with people from all around the world, and English may or may not be their first language, but all of them are fluent in one of the working languages of the UN, and most of the members of the committee, to my knowledge, are fluent in English. And as Naz explained, we are currently in the stage of the process where we're preparing for the review itself. And I believe the network has been sending out reminders about people submitting updates to the committee. These are updates to the shadow letter that should be no longer than 2 pages. And if you have not submitted your update to the network as of last week, then there's another opportunity to submit it directly to the committee by this. Well, it really needs to be in Geneva by this Friday, and there need to be 18 hard copies sent, so one copy for each committee member. And if you need more information about that, you can visit the committee's website or write to Kiara Lewis from the network directly, who can tell you more information. Okay, so moving on to the organized events that we are planning for Geneva as a task force. Many of you I know who are planning on attending the review have already made your travel plans, and that's great. If you have yet to submit your information about travel plans, please also send that to the network as soon as possible. We are hoping to have a meeting on Sunday evening, March 9th, where we can meet together and strategize about how the week will go. And we'll be sending out more information about that later. The first organized event that we have planned is a formal briefing on Monday, March 10th at 10:45 a.m. And this is a time that the committee has made available to all NGOs representing countries who are participating in that week's review. So we will need to be sharing time with other NGOs from other countries. And we're not exactly sure what format the Secretariat has decided will work best for this, because they're mindful of wanting to give as much time as possible to the U.S. delegation of civil society, but they also need to be accountable to the other NGOs who are attending. So we're in the process of working out the logistics with the Secretariat, and we'll get back to you as soon as we know more. For the formal briefing, we will likely be working through the working groups that Naz mentioned earlier. So it's very important, if you're planning on participating in the formal briefing, that you engage through one of the working groups. And we will be likely in this formal briefing also focusing on updates to the shadow report information and not on new information. And again, just to remind everyone that we're doing the best that we can to balance a lot of competing interests and issues and to make this as fair and representative as possible. We also are planning to engage with the committee in two informal briefings. that will take place at different times in the week. One is on Tuesday morning, March 11th. It's a breakfast meeting at 8 a.m. The place has yet to be determined, but again, we'll be sending more information about this shortly. The second informal briefing is on Thursday, March 13th from 2 to 3 p.m., and these will be a little bit different in format. They're shorter, so they're only 1 hour, but we are pleased that the committee was able to give us one more informal briefing than was scheduled in October when the review was originally supposed to take place in October. So this should provide more opportunity for people to have some exchanges with the committee members. This will be a little bit more interactive than the formal briefing and will likely focus on follow-up questions that any members may have on particular issues. And the next organized event that we have is a town hall with the U.S. delegation. They've just confirmed that they're willing to engage with us in a town hall. This was one of our demands that we made in our National Day of Action last year. So we were quite pleased that they responded to that and confirmed that they will be hosting a town hall at the U.S. Mission in Geneva. So this is an opportunity for us, instead of sharing info, we get to ask questions of the delegation directly. All of those who are attending the review should have received an invitation from the U.S. Mission, and because we have to RSVP in order to be able to attend that. So if you are planning on attending, and even if you aren't, because there's a call-in option, please, and you haven't received that invitation, please contact the network immediately, and they will forward that information to you. The deadline for sending in your RSVP is March 3rd. We are planning on setting up an additional time for those attending the review in Geneva to prepare and coordinate for this. It might take place that week on that Sunday. We just found out about this, so we are doing our best to make sure that we have adequate time to prepare. And for those who are at home, we also are mindful of the fact that you would want to participate as well, and we're trying to figure out a way to do that, to facilitate that. There is, as I mentioned, there is a call-in number, but we also are considering social media options. So if you have any ideas about how to make this town hall more inclusive, please let us know. We're definitely interested in hearing from you. As Naz mentioned earlier, there is the social media training on the 20th, and that will be a great opportunity for those interested in learning how to use social media surrounding the review to figure out if that's a way to engage in a town hall. Other events that may or may not happen during Geneva, but we wanted to flag for you. The first is a side event. We are considering hosting, the network is the we here, are considering hosting a side event that would be planned through the Human Rights Council, which is meeting at the same time as the Human Rights Committee. So this is a little confusing. But this the council provides organized space and time for NGOs to host events on various topics. And that would be in the Palais de Nation, so a different building than where the committee is hosting its periodic review of the U.S. We are in the process of trying to secure space and a program for this, and so we will keep you informed if this does materialize. But the audience would be other NGOs, both U.S. from the U.S. delegation and international, those attending the Human Rights Council session, and potentially Human Rights Committee members, although it might be unlikely given their schedule. The second potential activity is informal meetings with committee members. So there should be opportunities during breaks in the session for U.S. delegation, NGO delegation folks to lobby the committee members. We are urging folks to be strategic about this lobbying because the committee members tend to be overwhelmed with the number of people who attend from the U.S. And, of course, they're also busy doing all sorts of other meetings and working on other country reports and recommendations. So we need to be mindful of that and aware that you know, aggressive lobbying is probably less likely to be effective, but we're urging folks to try to do targeted lobbying. So the network is providing as much information as possible to assist you in this. We are preparing a briefing book on Human Rights Committee members that can provide more information about which are the issues that particular members care about, the questions they've asked at prior reviews, et cetera. And so we're urging you to consult this briefing book and use that as you consider lobbying members. And then we will also do our best to set up informal meetings with clusters of people interested in the same type of issue so that that can be an efficient use of everyone's time. I also just wanted to give a couple of websites a couple of links to on the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights website that might be good for everybody to have just to make sure that they're prepared with all the information they need. We will also be providing some of this in the briefing books that the network is preparing, but if you want to get a head start on looking at some of this information, if you go to the Office of the High Commissioner's website and go to human rights bodies, then there's a link to the Human Rights Committee website, and that will take you to the most current session. So this is just a it's too long of a link to post, but that's the way you navigate to it. And that can give you information about the program of work, so which countries the committee is reviewing and where they will be in the agenda the entire week that we're there. It also provides information to NGOs about how to engage the committee, most of which you probably already know, but it might be just worth another look. Another set of useful documents available on the same page is are all the documents related to the review of the U.S. So the U.S. report, the Common Core document, which is provided to all the treaty bodies and provides general information about the way that human rights are implemented in the U.S., the list of issues that the committee sent to the United States, the U.S. reply to that list, and then all of the shadow reports and other information that civil society has provided throughout the course of the review. So also just wanted to finally give you an idea of what the constructive dialogue, otherwise known as the review itself, would look like, and that is taking place on the afternoon of Thursday, March 13th, and the morning of March 14th. This is a dialogue that takes place between the committee and the U.S. delegation. A high-level government delegation from the U.S. is planning to attend, and they will likely include representatives across all branches and levels of government, including some state-level people. I don't believe we have the list of who's attending yet, but as soon as we know it, we will pass that on. And they will come prepared to present their report and their official report, as well as prepared to respond to any questions the committee might have, focusing on the list of issues, but likely also prepared to answer additional questions. This is not an adversarial process. The Human Rights Committee doesn't see itself as a judicial body, but it's more of a body that sees itself as working collaboratively with the U.S. government to implement the treaty provisions. So it's not like an adversarial process that you would see in a U.S. court, but probably more akin to a congressional hearing where they're trying to solicit information to get at the larger question about how to implement the treaty. So the U.S. government will present its report on the first day, and then the committee will follow up with questions going into the second day. Because it's a two-day review process, it's a great opportunity for advocates to provide follow-up information in the interim time period. So we can consult with one another, consult with treaty body members who have raised particular questions and provide them with follow-up information, or perhaps urge them to raise a question that they didn't raise on the first day. As I said, there's no formal role for civil society, but we can try to lobby these individual members before or after the session. And members also may seek us out because they see us as the expert on certain issues. So if they feel like they are lacking information, they may try to approach us as well. But we're also mindful that they want to appear impartial, giving sufficient time for the U.S. to respond and also making sure that they're viewed as sort of impartial, independent experts. So I think that about wraps up this section, but if people have questions, happy to take them. I don't know if Yolanda, you want to take them now or we can wait till the end. Either is fine with me.
Thanks, Katrina. I mentioned at the outset that we'll take the questions towards the end, and I see that a number of folks have joined us since we started the call. So just as a reminder that this call will be an hour and a half, we should be wrapped up with the sort of content of the call around the 2:50 mark. So for the folks who can't spend the full hour, the hour and a half with us, I'm asking that you use the *1 feature at the end of the presentation to raise your hand to be entered into a queue. And if you plan to stay for the hour and a half, try to reserve your questions until around the 3 o'clock mark, just out of courtesy for some of the folks who may have only scheduled an hour. So we'll continue forward with the rest of the call. This third section is on advocating in the U.S. during the review process. And essentially, it will look at what are some options you have for engaging if you're not in Geneva. As Naz and Katrina had mentioned during their presentation, that we're advocating that you connect with the various working groups that we have around the issues on the list of issues, as well as what you have brought before the committee. So again, the person to reach out to for that is our ICCPR coordinator, Kiera Lewis, and her email is Kiera, K-I-E-R-A, at ushrnetwork.org, and this will be repeated as we move forward. Our next presenter is Afia Nwangaza. Afia is a lifelong human rights advocate and a member of the USHR and ICCPR Task Force. She's also founder and director of the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination, the WMXP Radio, Community Radio, co-chair of the USHR and Political Prisoner Working Group, and past co-chair of the National Jericho Movement for Amnesty and Release of all U.S. Political Prisoners. And Afia is going to talk about those particular ways that you can participate while the delegation is in Geneva. Afia?
Good afternoon. Thanks, Shalon. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us on this call and even more for participating in this process. Your participation gives the process substance and the rest of us hope for a change in the way the United States does business at home as well as abroad. As I was preparing for these comments, a Girl Scout theme kept coming to me, and that is make new friends but keep the old. And as we focus on using so-called new media, that we not abandon old media in the process, that it new media is used to strengthen old media and indeed old or traditional methods of organizing and mobilizing civil society. It's imperative that we affirm the fact that the work that is to be done while the review is going on has already begun and continues each day forward, because it is the object of the participation in the review is to strengthen the work that we do on a daily basis, number one. And number two is it's the only reason for us to be in Geneva and to participate in the review process is that it's going to have an impact on the things, the activities in which we're engaged at home. both as it affects the issues with which we're engaged directly and indirectly the issues that the United States is involved in abroad. I wanted to, so as far as new media is concerned, I would again refer to the social media training that's scheduled for February 20th and urge folk to sign up for that using Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and the various other mechanisms that that are available. I want to focus on the necessity for building public education and joining in the public's mind the issues on which we are already working and the higher standard that the treaties represent without agitating, particularly here in the South, the xenophobia and the hostility that comes whenever the United Nations is mentioned. I think that we begin to do that when we talk to our constituencies, or, and that sounds elitist, but to with our colleagues and with the people with whom we work, especially those most directly impacted by the issues on which we work, in terms of the larger issues, the global struggle that is going on for human rights. And that discussion includes the education of the traditional press and our becoming for them a source for human rights so that we begin to make them comfortable with the concept of human rights, make them view us as the experts on the issue of human rights, and as a result of that, when questions of regarding human rights arise, we are the persons or organizations that come to mind. That we educate the persons with whom we work individually, collectively, organizationally, professionally, in that same manner, and empower them to speak in their own voice on their own behalf, which allows for greater authenticity of our treatment of issues and of the advancement of the issues around which we are working. How do we do that? We began doing that. We should already have begun doing that, but how do we formalize it using traditional methods, whether that's going to be a press conference, a tribunal in our various communities, presentations before local groups, whether that's the church, other civic organizations, even in training young people, other young people, about the issues at hand. An example that I would cite that we have used, we meaning the Malcolm X grassroots movement at the Malcolm X Center, some time ago, before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that juveniles, offenders who commit homicides cannot be subject to the death penalty, we did a joint project with Amnesty International, the local Department of Social Services, and the University of North Carolina at Asheville around the issue of the death penalty and its application to juveniles. And that the state of South Carolina at that time imposed the death penalty on juveniles. At that point, it raised the age from 14 to 16, which, as you can imagine, wasn't that much of a difference. And what we were able to do was to have an intern from Amnesty who came and not only trained the six young people, low-income youth, who were a part of a joint project between the Department of Social Services and the Urban League in job training, train them to work within a think tank, a professional environment atmosphere, doing research, one, on the United Nations website, and two, on the state of South Carolina's juvenile justice website, and to compare the Convention on the Rights of the Child with the provisions of the South Carolina Juvenile Code, and develop out of that a campaign which involved their developing a petition drive, their developing an educational presentation for the residents in public housing where they lived, as well as the members of their church. Having done those things, then they were able to prepare proposals, which they submitted to their district state representative and state senator, asking that that the representatives submit a bill in the legislature of the state of South Carolina prohibiting the imposition of the death penalty on juveniles. Well, for which they received significant media attention, which further educated the public and the issue that they were the issues that they were raising. It also they also participated in a Amnesty International Death Penalty Abolition Institute, which gave them broader exposure to other young people as well as experts working on the same issues, put them on a college campus, which gave them exposure and raised the possibility of going to college, which heretofore had not been one of the issues or one of their goals. So the work on making the use of the treaties and the treaty work substantive, as I have said before, should already have begun, and it continues in our integration of the theory into our practice and to apply it in ways that otherwise would leave it just to be theory as opposed to practice. Again, this is supplemented by the new media, which gives it further reach as opposed to becoming the campaign itself exclusively. And I'll stop there and answer whatever questions you have at the appointed time.
Thank you so much, Afia, and that much-needed push to make sure that, you know, whatever new media we utilize, that that also be integrated with the, as you say, old ways of working. So we're going to move to the next portion of the call, and this is the how do you take it back home, right? Post-review advocacy. This part will be led by myself, briefly going over what are the concluding observations, and followed by two case studies, one by Cynthia Suhu on shackling, another by Jokeka E of the NAACP on voting rights, and Ajim DK, the Executive Director of the U.S. Human Rights Network. And essentially, we want to talk about what does this whole review process look like, you know, coming back home, and essentially that this is a part of a larger strategy, not undivorced from everything else that you've been doing prior to engaging in this process. So in terms of the first piece of the concluding observations, these are the list of recommendations to the U.S. government that the committee makes after the review process. And the aim is at addressing the concerns raised during the review. They form the basis of future reports and follow-ups. So when the government has to report back within a year on how it's implementing, this will be the basis from which that report is generated. It's also a source from which to do advocacy with the government, but not that you should limit yourself just to the concluding observations, but it should be a basis from which to engage. As well, relating to Afia's point about engaging with various forms of media, outside of consultations and advocacy before the government, it's also a source of which to engage local communities, to inform them of the most recent push by the committee international body to get the U.S. to meet its obligations on the ICCPR as well as other treaties. So one of the things we'll do next is to hear from two advocates who've been able to utilize the concluding observations to advance their work. The first of whom is Cynthia Suhu, affectionately known as Cindy Suhu. Ms. Suhu is the director of the International Women's Human Rights Clinic at CUNY Law School. Prior to coming to CUNY, she was the director of the U.S. Legal Program at the Center for Reproductive Rights, and she was a founding board member of the U.S. Human Rights Network. Cindy?
Hi. Thanks so much, Yolande, and thank you for organizing this conference to the U.S. Human Rights Network. I think it was really great that Afia reminded us that our work really is part of our long-term work, right, and that if we actually go to Geneva, we get outstanding including observations, but they sit on the shelf. It hasn't really been worth the effort, right? And the big picture is really we're trying to think about how we reframe our issues that we work on to reinforce a common understanding of them as human rights violations. And so we're currently doing advocacy on the issue of the fact that youth in the United States are commonly tried as adults and held in adult prisons and jails and prisons. And this has happened for many years, and it seems to be accepted. And, you know, we're hoping through our advocacy at the UN that we can really kind of like break out of the chokehold. This is a phrase from my colleague Monique Harden, really break out of the chokehold of domestic law and really understand these issues in a different way, because clearly the rest of the world sees this as a human rights violation. And so what we're really trying to do is engage these human rights bodies to get clear statements and recognition that these issues that we're working on are human rights violations, and then use the standards to support organizing legal work, policy, and legislative work in order to change the conditions in the United States. It's also, I think, these reviews are an excellent opportunity to get press attention to issues, because a lot of times I think there are human rights violations going on every day and there's just no attention. But often the fact that a UN body might be calling out, you know, Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona for his policies, you know, harassing immigrants, actually focuses attention on issues and maybe starts a dialogue and creates pressure. So I actually wanted to talk about the case study on the work that people have done on the issue of shackling pregnant women who are incarcerated in jails and prisons in the United States. And this is actually work that a lot of people have done. I was involved in it briefly while I was in the Center for Reproductive Rights, but there are a lot of other people who've worked on this issue, and I just want to acknowledge that. And so I think, you know, this issue was actually raised in the U.S. review by the Convention Against Torture in 2000. Again, for the second, the U.S.'s review in 2006 before the Convention Against Torture, the Committee on the Convention Against Torture, the ICPR review in 2006, the CERD review in 2008, and the UPR review, I think, which was in maybe 2010 or 11. And what happened was sort of this consistent drumbeat from these UN bodies saying that this was clearly a human rights violation. And this was something I think, interestingly, the international community hadn't even spoken out a lot about, because it's actually unique to the United States. But it was so clearly a human rights violation that the concluding observations consistently said that the United States needed to do something, that it expressed concerns of recognizing that this was a human rights violation and probably torture or cruel and inhuman and degrading treatment. And so once these concluding observations came out, what we saw was people using the concluding observation in litigation work that they were doing. So there were a number of groups that were trying to argue that this practice was unconstitutional. So there were amicus briefs that were filed talking about why, in support of the argument that this was an Eighth Amendment violation, raising the fact that the rest of the world views this as a human rights violation and the United States should view it as a violation of its constitution. There was also organizing efforts Groups also worked, and I think sometimes we forget this, but worked actually to get policies changed. So the Rebecca Project actually worked to get the Federal Bureau of Prisons to change their policies and the Marshals to change their policies. So sometimes we don't even need to actually get legislation passed. Sometimes there are actually policymakers who can actually change policies to make a real difference. Anti-shackling legislation was passed in 2008, and people continued to work in the state at the state level using the statements that came from these international bodies in support of their advocacy work. So in New York, New York changed its law to outlaw shackling in most circumstances, I think a few years ago. And again, what came out of the human rights bodies was part of the organizing advocacy. And then I just want to raise one other issue, which I've actually been trying to focus on myself this time around when we're focusing on the issue of youth in adult prisons around the country, because this is really an issue where the federal government, it's not a federal problem, it's actually a state problem. And it's interesting, we started working on this issue in Michigan, and increasingly we're also working on it in New York, but what we found is it's so important for us as we're doing this international work to make sure that we're reaching out to different communities doing advocacy in different states, because this is a problem all over the United States, right? And if we're going to be really successful, we need to be thinking about how are we getting information from different states, and then how are we sending back, you know, what we're getting from these international bodies to support the work in different states. And we've tried to work through the U.S. Human Rights Network. We did an event at the convention in December, but we're increasingly just trying to figure out how do we work more effectively with people on the ground. And I'd love to have a conversation with people about that. Thanks.
Thanks, Cindy. Our next speaker is Joteka Edie, who will be talking about how the NAACP has use the process in their advocacy around voting rights and felony disenfranchisement. Joteka is a senior advisor to the president and CEO and senior director for voting rights for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Within that capacity, she directs external affairs and strategic initiatives on behalf of the Office of the President and CEO and leads the NAACP strategy to defend and expand access to the ballot box. Joteka.
Great, thank you so much. I think just as Cindy shared in terms of the experience of as it related to the work around juvenile justice and shackling and AFIA earlier as it related to the juvenile death penalty, there's a wealth of opportunity in utilizing this review process and many other UN mechanisms to advance domestic human rights in the United States. Many of our domestic policy issues that we support, particularly I can speak affirmatively for the NAACP, are also human rights values and values that are found in many human rights instruments, and particularly in the ICCPR treaty. Over the years, there's been a lot of attention and awareness that's been raised on the issue of voting rights, particularly the intersection of voting rights for people with felony convictions. In 2006, there was a concluding observation that called on the United States to ensure that people with felony convictions receive their right to vote back. They also looked at recommendations made by the National Elections Commission here in the United States, in addition to call to question the intersection of felony disenfranchisement as it related to people of color in the United States. It's also important to note that there was a concluding observation as it related to the right to vote for the residents of the District of Columbia. And as a result, that created a lot of momentum for advocacy in the United States, I think on three different levels. One, the public awareness. I think one of the most important aspects of the work that you can do after concluding observations take place, or even if there are questions or if these issues come up during this process, is raising it and amplifying the fact that there is a question, there is a concern that the United States is out of step. Of course, there's always a very delicate way that we do that, but making sure that what happens during this review process does not go or fall on deaf ears, that we amplify it, that we utilize our media mechanisms that we, you know, we're sharing this with the community and utilizing it in our domestic advocacy efforts. We have seen a lot of momentum, particularly at the federal level. We've seen momentum in Congress in terms of federal legislation that has been introduced, the Democracy Restoration Act. Of course, many of you on this call are very familiar now with Attorney General Holder's very bold statements just yesterday as it relates to the issue of voting rights for people with felony convictions. I think it's very telling because there are a number of advocates, not just the NAACP, the ACLU, the Lawyers Committee, the Citizen Project, and so many other movements that have taken really the concluding observations of 2006 in this process and other UN mechanisms to really push the U.S. on this issue. I think one other big aspect of how we've been able to utilize the UN process and our domestic advocacy is direct advocacy with the United States Justice Department. Often leading out of this, as I think, and this has been the theme of this call, is that you just don't go to this meeting, you don't participate in this process, and then you take pictures or you have a, you know, you meet and you go home. The work continues back at home. And I think there are a lot of opportunities for us to have one-on-one meetings, group meetings with the Department of Justice, the State Department, and various agencies about administrative process that could take place, federal directives and programs that can be put in place that actually helps move the United States in the direction of the treaty obligations as it relates to whatever the issue, in our case particularly voting rights. I think also one thing to add is that there is an incredible opportunity, and we've been able to utilize the UN mechanisms and the treaty process in our state advocacy and our messaging at the state level, and that has resonated very well in places like Virginia, where the Republican Governor McDonnell was very open and very much attuned to the fact that there has been international questions and concerns about the fact that the U.S. was out of step, but more so that Virginia was out of step, and that the issue of Virginia was being taken to the United Nations, and I think that played a big part in his decision. And in other states as well, Delaware, most recently where they changed their state constitution, in Iowa, where the governor actually, you know, really began to revert on some of the regressive policies. All in all, I think there lies a great opportunity for us to take really the recommendations, the observations, and utilize it not only in our congressional federal advocacy, but in our advocacy directly with the jurisdictions who actually can make decisions and can change policies as a result, and at the state level, and then overall in our public messaging and moving the public to hold all elected officials accountable on these very important domestic policy issues. We've seen a lot of forward momentum on this issue of voting rights, particularly at the intersection with people with felony convictions, but also D.C. voting rights and raising that issue. And I think this year going into the ICCPR process, these issues again are at the forefront of the committee, and the U.S. is going to be pushed on this. And I think the United States recognizes this, and I think it was reflected in the U.S.'s report to the committee, because they noted that the United States has some backward movement on this issue. So it's clear that the United States understands that this issue is important to the committee, and I think it's also going to be front and center given the entire spectrum of voting rights in our country right now. I mean, there's a great opportunity to further push these observations so that we can use it in our federal and our state level advocacy, our communications, and also in litigation as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Joteka. Next, we'll hear from our final speaker, Ajim Dike. Ajim is the executive director of the U.S. Human Rights Network. She has worked on social policy issues for over 15 years and in the domestic human rights arena for the past 10 years. Her human rights work focuses on addressing poverty and discrimination using the human rights framework, and she'll talk briefly about the year ahead. How do we connect our work in the ICCPR with the upcoming review processes for the other UN mechanisms, and how do we plan to use this in our consultations and advocacy for the government? Ajim.
Thank you, Yolande, and thank you to all the speakers today, as well as everyone who's joined the call. I really want to underscore something that almost every speaker said, which is that the primary purpose of engaging in these reviews and these human rights mechanisms is so that we can ensure that we're enjoying the full spectrum of human rights here at home. So in other words, it's an essential tool or one of the strategies that we should be taking full advantage of. And what we're really hoping that people do this year is that they leverage the reviews to expose injustice, to raise awareness generally about human rights violations happening in the U.S., like some of you have said, to put the focus on specific governments that are particularly bad, especially at the state and local level, to recognize and frame social justice concerns as human rights violations. I mean, all this is to put pressure on the government and on the administration to advance human rights. But I think also, more importantly, it's because the struggle never ends, it's really a part of mobilizing and building up a human rights movement in the United States. So what these reviews also offer to us is a way to organize around human rights, our organizing moments, if you will. And that's exactly what 2014 presents to us. 2014, this year, is a very important year for human rights. Not that every year isn't important, but this is a particularly unique year. Because as has been mentioned, I think Naz started off with this, we have a number of human rights reviews happening this year. So we already jump-started the process with the ICCPR review that we've been talking about, and of course the work that we've been doing prior. But as many of you probably know, the U.S. has ratified, which means it has formally accepted as law, three of the major human rights treaties. There's several more it hasn't, but the ones that it has ratified are the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, that's the ICCPR that we've been talking about, the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, we typically talk about it as CERD, the Convention and the Convention Against Torture, which we typically talk about as CAT. But those are the three major human rights treaties that the United States government has ratified. And like the ICCPR, the government gets reviewed on how well it's measuring up to the human rights protected by those treaties by an independent body of experts. And this happens on a regular review, on a regular basis. Now, in a somewhat unusual turn of events, all three reviews are happening this year. Like Naz said, and we have up on the PowerPoint, we have this calendar that we've put together and that you can access on our network website. But the ICCPR is happening this March. The CERD review is happening in August. And the CAT review is happening in November. All this year of 2014. Now, in addition, and coincidentally, this March, when we are in Geneva, or some of us will be in Geneva, for the review of the United States on its compliance with the ICCPR, the Human Rights Council will also be meeting. And this is another body of the United Nations that was created by resolution, by General Assembly resolution, and is made up of 47 members of the United Nations. Many of you may remember years past we had the Human Rights Commission, but it wasn't considered as politically and economically strong a body within the United Nations. So the General Assembly passed a resolution to create this Human Rights Council, which is a stronger body made up of the 47 members of the UN, including the U.S., who work to promote and protect human rights around the world. Coincidentally, they're also meeting in March. So it's an opportunity for people who will be in Geneva to meet with other special experts, special rapporteurs, as well as, I think Katrina mentioned this also, other NGOs from around the world who will be in Geneva. So it's it presents us with an opportunity to build some global alliances. And then, as if that's not enough, the UN also has another process that was created by UN Charter to review the human rights records of all the members of the United Nations. And many of you may know of this process. It's called the Universal Periodic Review, or the UPR for short. And it's a little bit different from treaty reviews because it's a peer review. In other words, governments review each other as opposed to being reviewed by a body of independent experts. The last time the U.S. went through the UPR was in 2010. It will be reviewed again in April of 2015, that's next year. However, the NGO reports that will inform that review are due September of 2014. So we have in March the ICCPR review, as well as the Human Rights Council meeting. In August, the third review. In September, we have the reports for the UPR due. And in November, we have the CAT review. All this means is that we have several opportunities throughout the year to keep the focus on human rights. And while we've said this, human rights treaties, or the use of the treaties and the review, is not a silver bullet. It won't magically solve all our problems, but it is so underutilized, and I think that this is the year that we really want to take full advantage of the fact that we have all these treaties and that we have opportunities organizing and mobilizing moments throughout the year, essentially been given to us, to put the focus on human rights in the U.S. And the truth is, if we don't fully take advantage of it, someone else will. Either the government will take advantage of the fact that we're largely silent, which will seem as if we consent to whatever is being said in government reports or by the government representatives, or the vacuum could be filled by other groups who don't know much about what's happening about human rights on the ground. So we must take full advantage of this opportunity. So one of the things we're trying to think about at the network and between the different task forces of the network is how do we make it as easy, I guess, and effective as possible for groups, particularly many of the groups who have fewer resources to engage in the process. Because we are talking about the potential of submitting reports for each review, or going to participate in briefings for each review. So we are planning to come up with a template that will help groups build on some of the reports and the concluding observations that come out of the ICCPR, but that can help also provide information for the CERD review, the UPR, and the CAT review. Now, we haven't come up with it yet because it's going to be pretty tricky to do. But one of the things that we're thinking about is coming up with a template for groups to come up with one core document, similar to what the government does, and then provide short page updates that are targeting the different review bodies as they come up. All that to say that we were really thinking about how we can make it as easy as possible and as seamless as possible for groups to take full advantage of all the opportunities. The last thing I want to mention is that part of this process is also engaging directly with the government. As Katrina mentioned earlier, there will be for the ICCPR review a consultation with the U.S. government in Geneva, and we pushed very hard to get it to be a town hall style, which, as she explained, is really an opportunity for us to ask questions of the administration and hear back from them, as opposed to them sitting in on a listening session where they hear us present our reports. So it's a much more engaging format, and it will allow us to extract commitments from government representatives or force the administration to make statements on specific human rights issues as they occur, and to hear directly, to hear questions, to be questioned directly by people who are, who have been directly impacted by human rights violations. But we will also, in addition to that consultation, be insisting on and asking for our consultation with the government after we come back from Geneva and after the concluding observations that Yolande described are issued, which are essentially the recommendations on how the administration can best, the U.S. can best implement the ICCPR treaty. There is now a body, an interagency federal body called the Equality Working Group. And the Equality Working Group is co-chaired by the Department of Justice and the State Department. And they're really charged with implementation of human rights obligations, largely as they relate to equality issues, although we've been pushing them to expand beyond that. So we really are encouraging groups to take full advantage and to engage with the Equality Working Group. And if you want more information about that, you can also visit our website and look under the Hurrah campaign, which is the Human Rights at Home campaign. Let me end there because I know that we've gone beyond time, and just say this, that like I've said and like I think all of us have been saying, this is about bringing human rights home. And if there's ever a year to forefront discussions and organizing on human rights, I think this is the year. So we're really appealing to all of you to reach out to all your groups to make sure that we take full advantage of it.
Thank you so much, Adam, and all of the speakers who've gone already. As you've mentioned, we are a little bit behind on time, but we do have about 15 or so minutes for questions. Just a couple reminders of how to participate in this process. You can use, if you're online, the chat feature to type your questions to me, which I will ask the presenters today, as well as, and this is the feature that I encourage you to use the most, is the raised hand feature, which is to press star 1 to be entered into a queue to ask your question. And if you've changed your mind or have already asked a question, use the pound sign to lower your hand. I don't yet see any questions, but one question that was raised via the chat was about the URL for the social media webinar. The URL that was shared, I've also shared again via the chat, and it's tinyurl, tinyurl.com / N6H2FUF. And it may look as if it's the same registration for this webinar, but it's not. The date should read February 20th at 2 p.m. So we have our first question. Laura, please go ahead.
Hi, yes. This is Laurel Krause from the 10th State Truth Tribunal. We're going to be going to Geneva, and we're really excited about this. We don't fall within any of the tasks, the different groups that you have, because we're actually going to be focused on United States accountability as well as the human right to protest. So I went to the CSO.net to register for my passes. And I noticed that the event area the events for the United Nations trip to, you know, the U.S. Fourth Periodic Review is not listed there yet.
So,
hello?
Yes, you're saying that the report that you've submitted is not that online on the Human Rights Committee page.
No. CSO.net. It is where you can register for your passes to get onto the United Nations, you know, area. You know,
correct.
You have to register with them. And when I went to register for the event wasn't there.
And you've done this recently?
Yes, I did it yesterday.
Huh. Well, we'll have our coordinator, Kara, look into that and see what could be the issue. We haven't heard of other folks not being able to register, and we ourselves have been registering. So we'll, I would say, contact Kara, and I also have her contact you.
I would love for Kara to contact me. That would be great.
So if you send me your email address via the chat, we can have our follow-up accordingly.
How do I do it via chat? I was online before. Where's the chat function online?
It should be in the left-hand corner of the screen.
Oh, perfect. I see it there. Thank you very much. Now, it's not being part of one of the nine groups that you were saying kind of makes it feel like we're going to be kind of out there all alone when it's...
Hello? I'm sorry you got disconnected, Laurel, but I think there's still a place for you within the process. Correct me if I'm wrong, Katrina or Ajim, but I think you should still reach out to the task force. I mean, as we move forward to participate in Geneva, we will have a general call for all who will be attending. And so it's important to at least coordinate to find time for you to present your issue as well.
Yes, that's right, Yolande. And the sooner she can contact Kara, who would be the main contact, the better and more likely it is that we can plan and incorporate her comments ahead of the issue, which is an important issue, ahead of time. And like Katrina had said earlier, we really are trying to balance the time that we have, the very limited time we have for the briefings, to make sure that it's fair, it's inclusive of as many issues as possible, but that it's an effective and strategic use of the time so that we end up allowing sufficient time for the committee to ask questions of us and to get information from us. So we're really trying to be disciplined about how we use the time and do as much planning beforehand before we get to Geneva.
And this is Naz. I actually think that that issue might fit within the last working group potentially. So if Kira could possibly connect her in with me, that would be helpful.
Great. Thank you both. So I see there's a question about, several questions about the PowerPoint. Yes, today's PowerPoint will be available after the call, as well as the audio, which will be turned into an MP3 and distributed via email, as well as a resource on our website. And the question in regards to the calendar that Ajim went over, that is already available on our website, specifically on our project page under the UPR. And also linked under the ICCPR. And I'll remind you of some of these links as we finish up the call. One of the things that was mentioned during the CS presentation was that, you know, one of the ways you can participate in the process is through the live webcast of the review that will take place. And we don't yet have the link to that, but the Center for Civil and Political Rights, which is a Geneva-based organization that helps to facilitate participation in the reviews under the Human Rights Committee, has a link on their page to this webcast, which we will then link on our website for you. And that is www.treatybodywebcast.org. And I will also send this out in our follow-up email post-call. So one of the things you can do with that is, you know, host a live showing of the event, have a conversation around it. There's another opportunity to engage if you won't be in Geneva to actually witness the review in person. There's a question in regards to the town hall. It says, in what way would it be best to prepare for the town hall? Ajim, would you like to take that question? Ajim, your phone is breaking up. Could you repeat? And it could be the really bad weather that we're having in Atlanta. So why don't we go ahead and take another question? We have one question from JR.
The question would be if funds is raised by individual groups or organizations, will they also be able to participate in the process in Geneva?
The first part of your question was inaudible. If groups were...
Groups who raise funds on their own, would they be able to... send a delegate or a delegation to participate in the process in Geneva?
Yes. So the question is, if groups are able to raise funds on their own, can they send a representative or a delegation to Geneva? Absolutely. And we would encourage the group or the individual to coordinate with the network that's helping to coordinate the process in Geneva. And we have a question from Ann Ginger Fagan.
Yes, my question is, what are you doing to get the cities, counties, and state governments to make the report to the U.S. government so it can include them in their reports? And maybe I'm also asking if you've looked at ACR 129 of California, which we got them to pass, in which the legislature asked the Secretary of State to publicize the text of the treaties at the city, county, and state government levels and to prepare templates so that the government officials could make reports. And I wondered if you could start including those things in your work.
AGEM, are you able to participate? And can you answer that question in regards to what are we doing in terms of getting local officials and governments to report as part of their obligation?
Well, we depend on the wonderful work of people like the Mickeljohn and the Human Rights Institute at Columbia Law School, who's been working through the Human Rights at Home campaign directly with state and local officials to encourage them to submit reports. And on a related issue, in fact, the state of Tennessee's Human Rights Commission, through their work with the Human Rights Institute, recently called for testimony on human rights concerns for that people have in Tennessee. So there are groups that are part of the network that are working directly and trying to encourage state and local governments to submit reports. We did not include those in the civil society reports that we submit, but could, and I think it's a great idea to raise the fact that to raise awareness about the reports that have been submitted, and of course always encourage governments to submit them as well. I want to say also previously the answer to how to participate in the town hall is to keep an eye out for our emails. But in the meantime, to be thinking about what's the most strategic way of asking a question and what's the most strategic question to ask of the administration. And then the last thing I wanted to say, which is unrelated, but just a plug, that on Friday is the 1 Billion Rising campaign, looking at gender violence against women as a human right. So while it's not part of our official human rights campaign, we are encouraging people to engage in that process, and you can go to their website, 1 Billion Rising, to figure out what's happening in your community, or to engage using social media or any other activities that they offer.
Thank you, AGEM. And we have one question, and this will be our last.
Hi, this is Everett Hasbrook. You've referred to a town hall. The previous so-called consultations were just totally one way. The U.S. delegation seemed to be just there to hear what we were going to be saying to the committee. They never responded or answered any questions. Have you been getting some feedback from the U.S. government, or is there some indication that at the meeting in Geneva they'll actually be answering questions rather than just listening silently? Is there any real dialogue or response?
That's exactly what we've been pushing for, Ed. So the reason why we've been asking for a town hall meeting is that's the style format that they had around the Universal Periodic Review in 2010, and it was essentially more engaging, where members, advocates, activists who were there got to ask them questions, and they had to respond to those questions. So it was definitely two-way, and that's why we have been pushing for that format. And as of last week, they have confirmed that that's the format that they plan to have this consultation for this consultation that they're planning in Geneva, and that they're also looking to make sure they have the video equipment so that people can call. Well, one, people can call in from the U.S., but so that people can participate via teleconference from the U.S. that I don't think has been confirmed yet, but it's definitely the idea is that this will be a two-way format.
And there was a question raised, I think, by Jatega from NAACP, which is that they hadn't received that invitation from the U.S. government about participating in the town hall. And they have a delegation of 14 people who will be attending.
We can send them the name of the person in Geneva. It just is likely an oversight because they have many different lists, I think. But and then they can write them to RSVP.
Okay. Thank you. So I would like to thank all of our speakers, Nazrina, Katrina, Ajam, Asya, Indy, Joteka, for a wonderful presentation and very informative and instructive, as well as you, our participant. We had over 100 or so folks on the call. And, yes, this PowerPoint will be available after the call, as well as the recording of the call. So in case you've missed anything or want any of the links. But before we close, a couple important reminders. In order to reach out to our ICCPR coordinator, Kara Lewis, her email is Kara, K-I-E-R-A, at ushrnetwork.org. And you can access our year-long campaign, which will also have the calendar that Ajam has gone over there, as well as more information about upcoming events related to the campaign throughout the year. The social media webinar, the link to participate is www.tinyurl.com/N6H2FEF. Please register for that. As well as the National Day of Action, which will be February 26th. The call to action will be going out this week, as well as we move closer to the Day of Action, sample tweets for how to participate, as well as instructions for participating, as well as examples of particular local actions that you can take to engage. And lastly, we invite you to join the network by becoming a member, and you can do that by visiting our website at www.ushrnetwork.org/join-movement. So thank you all for joining today's call. And please continue to engage with us at the network around ICCPR and all the future reviews coming up. Have a great day.